Hey, you're tuned in to the Verve Podcast live from the heart of Las Vegas, Nevada. Thanks for listening, and viva la Verve.
Mary Shelley was 18 years old in 1818 when she wrote the now classic story of Frankenstein. The book begins with a guy named Captain Robert Walton, who's leading an expedition to the North Pole by boat. His crew and his boat is going through the waters, but the ocean has almost frozen around them, huge sheets of ice all around, and so they're barely able to navigate it. And one day, they're out there in the middle of all the ice, and they see this scene in the distance. It's this sled of dogs being driven across the ice, and the guy who's driving the dogs is a huge dude. Well, then the next day, they're still in the boat, still barely able to move, and they see this guy who is laying on the ice. He's half dead. It's just him and a sled and a dog. And so they get the guy into their boat, and they warm him up, and they feed him. And finally, they're able to ask him who he is and what's going on. And he explains that he is Dr. Victor Frankenstein, that he is a scientist and natural philosopher. And he begins to tell his tale. How in college he studied natural science and philosophy, and he became obsessed with questions like, where does life come from? And how is life made? And could it be possible to restore life to something that's now dead? And so he started to hang out in graveyards and watch bodies decompose just to try to learn the secrets of life. And eventually, he thought he understood how he could bring a dead life back from the dead. And so what he did is he kind of constructed a human being from dead various body parts. And he only chose big body parts because he wanted the body to be easy to work with and the parts to be easy to get to. And so he constructs this creation. And finally, there's this very rainy night, and he's in his lab, and he does it. He brings his creation to life. All of a sudden, his eyes open, and breath starts to go out his nose and in his nostrils. And he realizes he's done it. But he also realizes in that moment that he has made a dreadful mistake. As soon as his creation opens his eyes, Dr. Victor Frankenstein realizes that he's grotesque. That he is just this huge, clumsy, ugly monster of a being. He's not the work of art that he meant for him to be. And he's repulsed. The doctor is repulsed by his creation. And so he runs out of the room and hides in his bedroom, hoping that the monster will just go away. Finally, he goes to sleep. But in the middle of the night, he wakes up to find his creation just staring at him. It's like the creation just wants to be connected to his creator. But Dr. Frankenstein will have nothing of it. He is repulsed by this monster. And so he banishes him from his house and makes him go far away. And Dr. Frankenstein tries to just continuing life, living life as if nothing happened, as if he didn't make him. But it's too late for that. Because there's now this creation, this monster out in society. And he really wants to be accepted by society. He wants to have companionship, but no one wants to have anything to do with him. They see him as huge and ugly and repulsive, and so everyone just kind of stays away. Well, this creation, Dr. Frankenstein's monster, he begins to teach himself how to talk and how to read, and he lives out in the woods far away from people, so he kind of can hide out by himself. One day, he's hiding there in the middle of the woods when this girl goes running by, a little girl. And it's real obvious that she must be playing hide and seek with someone out there. And the girl just happens to fall into the river and starts to drown. Well, the Frankenstein's monster dives in selflessly, risking his life, battling against the raging current to save this girl. And finally he does, and he brings her up to shore, and she's okay. But just then her father comes walking up, and afraid of what this hideous monster is going to do to his daughter, he grabs his daughter and starts walking away. And as he does, he turns back and he shoots Frankenstein's monster in the shoulder. It's like this act of kindness is repaid with hatred. And everywhere he turns, this creation experiences hatred. And so he starts to hate. He becomes a monster. He hates society, and he especially hates Victor Frankenstein for making him in the way he made him. And he vows revenge. And what he starts doing is he starts killing off everyone that Victor Frankenstein cares about. One by one, he just starts killing them off. And then finally, Dr. Frankenstein gets married, and his creation, this monster, viciously attacks and kills his new bride. Well, Dr. Frankenstein has had enough, and he vows that he is going to rid his life and rid the world of this horrible monster that he's created. And so he starts pursuing him and ends up pursuing him to the very ends of the world to try to take his life. So, question. Have you ever felt like Dr. Frankenstein's monster? Have you ever had thoughts of, have you ever maybe looked in the mirror and thought thoughts like, God, if you really are the creator, why did you make me like this? Maybe you looked at yourself and you're unhappy with how your face looks or the proportions of your body, and you thought, I mean, really, if you're this creator, couldn't you have made me look better than this? Or you think about things that you struggle with and things that have become hardships in your life, and you're like, if you care about me, why would you make me this way? Why do I have to be this way? Maybe you have had times where you just felt like the world just didn't want you. You know, like you didn't fit in. Maybe you've had times where you just feel like you're just too uncool or too just not successful enough or something, that you're just not accepted and loved the way you want to be. Have you ever looked at yourself and just felt like a monster? Some crazy creation of a mad scientist that went wrong. If you have, I can relate, honestly, in all kinds of ways. Like, for instance, I saw one counselor for a while, and this counselor diagnosed me as having ADD. And so having ADD means that it's difficult for you to just stay focused on one thing, on the thing that's right in front of you. I saw another counselor who diagnosed me as also having attachment disorder. Attachment disorder is when you go through such traumatic things early in life that you kind of shut parts of yourself down to avoid future pain. As I understand it, a person with attachment disorder, if you did a brain scan on them, there would actually be like black holes, like areas of inactivity in the brain where there should be brain activity. So I have goals for my life. Like my main goals in my life are I want to have this relationship with God where I have like intimacy with God, and I want to be a loving husband and father, and I want to really connect with and pastor the people that God has trusted to my care in this church. And try doing that with ADD and attachment disorder. It makes you feel like Frankenstein's monster. It's like, why? God, if this is the life you had for me, why would you make me this way? Why do I have to go through this? And I wonder if you've ever felt like Frankenstein's monster. Well, if so, here's what I want to tell you today. I want to tell you today that Frankenstein's monster's story is not your story. Even if you feel that way. Maybe the way you look at it yourself. Or maybe you have parents who have always made you feel that way. You had parents that you could never do it good enough for them. That you weren't smart enough. Or you weren't athletic enough. You weren't successful enough. And they've always made you feel like this kind of mismade monster. You know, or maybe it's that you've never been able to achieve what you want to achieve in life. And so in school, you could never get quite the grades that you wanted to get. And in your career, you've just never been able to accomplish what you hope to accomplish. Or maybe that it's now, it's later in life and you're still single. Or you find yourself now single again. And you just feel like Frankenstein's monster story is my story. But I am here to tell you today that is not true. That you are not a monster, no matter how you feel. And that you have great worth and value just the way you are. In fact, you may feel like, God, you kind of screwed me over when you made me. But I want to tell you today that the way God looks at you is probably not the way you think God looks at you at all. And my hope is that from this day forward, for the rest of your life, that you might see yourself the way God sees you. All right? So let's start by talking about your birth, okay? And I want to show you a passage in the Bible about your birth. It's in the book of Psalms, chapter 139. If you have a Bible with you, you can turn there. If not, we put the verses on the screen, so you're totally fine with that one. But if you don't own a Bible, we'd really like for you to have one, and we give them out as free gifts. There's no catch, there's no cost. Just stop back at the Velcro bar on your way out, and you can grab a Bible. There's people back there. If you want to talk to somebody today, if you'd like to meet somebody, make a connection, man, they're friendly people. If you'd rather not, if you kind of like to stay anonymous and just check things out, understood, just grab a Bible, keep walking. All right, so Psalm 139, verses 13 through 16. Put it on the screen. It says, "For you," and "you" in this is God, "for you, God, created my inmost being. You knit me together in my mother's womb. I praise you because I am fearfully and wonderfully made. Your works are wonderful. I know that full well. My frame was not hidden from you when I was made in the secret place, when I was woven together in the depths of the earth. Your eyes saw my unformed body. All the days ordained for me were written in your book before one of them came to be." Maybe you have this idea that if there's a God at all, and if this God really created the universe, that it's kind of like God created the universe and then stopped creating. You know, he kind of did his thing and now just sits back and watch. But that's actually not true at all. The Bible tells us that God is always creating. It's what he does. He creates, always creating. And that one of the things that God is always creating are human beings. That God is actually intimately involved in the creation of human beings. And we get the picture in this passage that it's not like God kind of churns people out on an assembly line. You know, it's just kind of like, you know, we get the idea that God is actually intimately involved in the painstaking care of specifically making the people he wants to make. And we don't get the idea that there's this God who's kind of this mad scientist in a lab taking together kind of random body parts and throwing them together and then going, "Oops, that is not what I meant to create. You know, this was a mistake." We don't get that idea at all. We get the idea of a God who's like in control of this process and making people exactly as he wants them to be, that he knows who they're going to be. You know, I think back to when my wife was pregnant with each of our kids. And it's an interesting thing, you know, when you're going to have a baby, because, like, you're totally excited to have this baby. And it's obvious that this baby's coming because, like, mommy's belly keeps getting bigger and you see it's coming. But there's this odd thing that you don't know who this kid is going to be. You know, and then one day, finally, it happens, and then you find yourself driving home from the hospital with a total stranger. You know, and you're kind of like, who is this stranger that we're letting live in our home? You know, is this really a good idea? We don't know who this person is. And that is true of parents, but that is not true of God. You know, that's not the idea we get of God in this passage. Instead, we see that God knows who you're going to be and loves you. In fact, the idea we get is that the reason you exist is because God wanted you to exist. The reason there is a you is because God chose to create a you. And God chose to create you because he wanted to know you and to love you and he wanted you to know him and to love him. It's kind of like God was sitting on his throne one day in heaven. And he was just kind of sitting up there, and he was kind of thinking about all the people in the world and all the people that he loves very much, when all of a sudden this idea struck him. He could make a you. He realized that he hadn't made a you yet, and that a you would be someone that he could take great enjoyment in. That a you, like particularly you, with your personality and with your smile and with your laugh, with your hang-ups and your bad habits and your bad hair days and your nose that's too small and your eyebrows that are too bushy and your ears that are too big and your laugh that is too loud and your voice that is too squeaky, that a you, particularly you, is someone that he would like to know very much and that he would love to love. A you that he would love to be known by and be loved by. And he realized that there was no you. And so he had to make a you. And so it's like kind of like God got off his throne and went to his workroom and went to work. And inside the womb of this woman, he started to knit together a you. A you who's too shy. A you who's a little too boisterous. A you. You, exactly you. Because he wanted you to be exactly the way he wanted you to be. He made a you because there was no you. And a you would be a great enjoyment to him. And so he went about creating a you. That's why there's a you. Because God thought there should be. And because God knew that he would love to know you and love you. And he would love for you to know and love him. You know, it's possible that maybe some of you, like me, maybe there was a point in your life where you realized, I don't think I was wanted by my parents. Maybe there was a day where you kind of did some math and you realized, I don't think I was planned for by my parents. I don't think so. And if you feel that way, if you've been made to feel or you did the math and you feel like you weren't planned for, you weren't wanted, then maybe that has left you feeling less than. You know, like man, I wasn't planned for, I'm less than. But that's not it. I mean, this idea that God made you because he wanted you, that changes everything, doesn't it? Because you were not planned for perhaps by your parents, but you were planned for by God. In fact, what God did was he overcame the resistance of your parents to make sure that there would be a you, whether they realized that there needed to be a you or not. It's like God forced you into existence. And man, there is great dignity in that, isn't there? It's like, wow, you're not here just because two people decided that they wanted to have a kid. You're here because the God of the universe knew that he needed a you in his universe. And he couldn't imagine this world without you. There is great dignity in that. And listen, my hope is that from this day forward, that you would remember who you are. That you are not what other people say you are. You are not what your parents think you are. You are not your accomplishments. That you are not the grades you got in school. That you don't have to hang out with the cool people. That you don't have to be accepted by the right people. That you don't have to get good grades in school. That you don't have to get that promotion. That you don't have to live in a big house or drive a fancy car. That you are special and you are valuable and you have great worth. Because you were created by God specifically and with incredible care and detail. He created you exactly the way. You don't have to pretend that you're something you're not. You don't have to make yourself seem bigger or better than you are. Because God created you the way you are and he loves you. And he wants you to know and love him. And it's not just your birth. It's also kind of the rest of your life, you know, what you would end up becoming after your birth. It's not just how you were made, it's how your life would go. You know, just like a parent has great ideas about, great plans, great hopes for their kids. You know, man, I just hope they're happy and I hope someday they have a great marriage. In the same way, God has great hopes and dreams for our lives. In fact, that passage we looked at, it ended by saying this: all the days ordained for me were written in your book before one of them came to be. And then there's this other passage in the Bible, in the Old Testament, in the book of Jeremiah, chapter 29, verse 11. And it says, "For I know the plans I have for you, declares the Lord." We'll put it on the screen. "For I know the plans I have for you, declares the Lord. Plans to prosper you and not harm you. Plans to give you hope and a future." And so it's like God saying, you know, just like a loving parent, he's like, "I have this plan for your life. I have got this great idea for how your life could go." And so it's not just making you, it's like the whole thing. God has these amazing plans for your life. Plans that you would be secure in his love. Plans that you would help other people to find their security in his love. Plans that you wouldn't get your self-esteem from other people or your accomplishments, but instead your self-esteem would come from knowing that I was created by God. He made me just the way he wants me, and he knows me, and he loves me. Plans that you would find God, that you would seek him and find him, and that you would follow him in his ways, and that by following him in your life, you would avoid all kinds of pain and heartache. Plans that you would use the unique way that God made you to bless the world. That you would become a change agent for good in this world. And that because you are here in this universe of God's, that this world would be a better and more beautiful place because of the way you lived your life. God has great plans for your life. Now here's a reality. If we're being honest, I think most of us would probably say, I haven't even come close to that. I mean, that may be God's ideas for my life, his plans for my life, but that is not the life I've lived, if we're just being honest. I mean, like, not only is that not the life I've lived, I've come closer to living the opposite than I have living that. You know, the reality is I don't find security in his love. That's not how I've lived. And I haven't helped other people to find security in his love. And you know what? I do get my self-esteem from other people and what they think of me or my accomplishments and how proud I can be of that. And the truth is, I haven't followed God's ways. I didn't seek him. I haven't found him. I haven't tried to follow his ways. And so I've had all kinds of pain and heartache that I guess maybe I could have avoided. And honestly, I haven't used the unique way God made me to serve the world and bless the world. I've used it to serve me and bless me. I haven't lived a selfless life of trying to make this world a better place. I've lived a selfish life of trying to make my life better. Maybe you've lived out kind of the opposite of God's plans for your life. And you may have this idea of God, that he's kind of like Dr. Frankenstein. That maybe he made you with this great idea of, I'm going to love you and you're going to know me and we're going to have this relationship and you're going to live this way. But that once he saw what you had become, once you kind of opened your eyes and enough breaths had gone out and in your nose and you had lived life long enough to veer far from God's path, that he was kind of repulsed by you. That God was like, oh, I didn't know it was going to be like this. And he kind of ran and left you to yourself and he left you and abandoned you because he didn't want to have anything to do with you. Listen, if that's your picture of God, you have the wrong picture of God. In fact, God promises us in the Bible that he will never leave us, that he will never forsake us, that he will never abandon us, never. Now, the reality, I think if we're honest, the reality is there are times in life where we feel like that. Right? There are times in life where you feel like you're not being helped by God, where you feel like you're alone, where you feel like you're not in God's presence, that he's left you. And honestly, it's normal to feel that way. Even people who get really close to God often, or at least sometimes, feel like God is very far from them. In fact, the guy who wrote Psalm 139 is named David, the guy who wrote, "You knit me together in my mother's womb." And David was a guy who was very close to God. But he wrote a lot of the other psalms in the Bible. They're kind of songs or poems. And in the other psalms, a lot of times, he writes about feeling completely alone. And he talks to God saying things like, "Why have you abandoned me? Why aren't you with me?" And so we're never alone. God never leaves us. But there are times where we may feel alone and like God has abandoned us. And I wonder if maybe God allows us to feel that way so that we'll grow. Do you think it's possible that maybe God allows us to go through times of feeling like he's not with us so that will grow? You know, in a life of a child, you know, you bring this kid home from the hospital and he starts to live his life. It is a big day in the growth and development of a child when he realizes or she realizes that just because mom and dad leave the house and are gone for a few hours, it doesn't mean that they're not coming back. Now, that they can leave and they still love me and I'm still secure and they're going to come home. Maybe God allows us to go through some times where we don't sense his presence because he wants us to get to a place where we realize that we are secure in his love even when we don't feel his love. And where we realize that we are always with God and he is always with us even if we don't sense his presence. Maybe. I don't know. But I do know that in the Bible, God promises us, I will never, doesn't matter what you do, I will never leave you. But you can leave him. You can leave him. You know, God won't leave us, but we can walk away from him. And when we do, do you know what God does? He pursues us. He pursues us. You know, with Dr. Frankenstein, he pursued his creation because he decided that the world would be a better place without him. With God, it's the exact opposite. He created us because he knew that the world needs us. And if we walk away from him, he pursues us because he still loves us and wants a relationship with us. And that's why God sent Jesus. You know, if you read the stories of Jesus' life, which are in the books of Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John in the Bible, what you see is that when Jesus was here on earth, sent from God in heaven, that what he did was he pursued people who had walked away from God. Jesus didn't hang out with the good people. He hung out with the bad people. He constantly hung out with people who had just decided, I don't want God, and they had walked away from him. And so Jesus was constantly walking towards them and with them, trying to turn them around and help them to see that they had this Father who still loved them and who still wanted a relationship, and that was the best thing life had to offer, and helping people to turn back to God. And then finally, that pursuit that Jesus was on for those of us who have fled from God, that pursuit led Jesus to the cross. Because in God's economy, it was only through Jesus' sacrificial death on the cross that all of our sins could be taken away from us so that we could kind of have the monster that we maybe have become through the things we've done taken away from us and we could be made right with God. I like the way the Bible talks about it in 1 Peter chapter 3, verse 18. We'll put it on the screen. It says, for Christ died for sins once for all, the righteous for the unrighteous, to bring you to God. And so it's saying, you know, Jesus died so that he could take our sins away, everything that had made us into a monster, so that we could be brought to God because we've been running far away from him. So listen, if you're still fleeing God, is still pursuing you. And it may be that you're fleeing because you feel like a monster. You know, it might be that you had those parents who made you feel less than, that you know, your appearance or your lack of accomplishment or whatever it is has made you feel like, man, I am not someone who's good enough for God, and I'm not sure I want a God who would make me this way, and so you've run from God. Or it may be that you're fleeing not because you feel like a monster. It may be that you're fleeing because you really have become a monster. Maybe you look at your life and you look at the things you've done and you're like, you don't understand, I've done bad things. I mean, like, I haven't lived this life of blessing others and helping others. I've lived a life where I've used and abused people. I've hurt people I should have loved. And so I am a monster. And maybe you've run from God because you feel like he's sort of like Dr. Frankenstein and he wouldn't want to have anything to do with someone like me. Or maybe you flee from God because that is your picture of him. Maybe you view God as someone who, you know, has no grace and who would look at someone like you and decide, I don't want to have anything to do with them. And so you run. But you need to know this. Listen, God knows you. He created you and he knows you. And God knows your sin. He knows everything you've done. He knows the worst of it. And still, God is pursuing you in love because he made you because he needed a you. And he wanted you to know him and love him because he knows you and he loves you. And so he is pursuing you. You know, in the story, Dr. Frankenstein said he was near the North Pole to seek the one who fled from me. And the reason he was seeking his creation was because he was trying to take his life away. Well, since the moment you left, God has been pursuing you, not to take your life away, but to give you life in him. And so, why not stop running? Why not allow yourself to be found by him? Why not fulfill the very purpose for which you were created, which is to know and be loved by him, and to know and love him in return? We've got a few people who are going to be getting baptized here in 15 minutes or so. We're going to do it out back after the service. And baptism is exactly that. Baptism is a person deciding, I'm not running anymore. Baptism is a person who's deciding, I want to go back to God. I want that relationship with him. In baptism, if you're welcome to come back and celebrate and watch what's going to happen. But it's odd, honestly. But what happens is a person's lowered underwater and then raised out of water. And you might see that and be like, what is that? Why? What is that about? But what it is, it's supposed to represent this death as you're lowered underwater, almost as if into a grave. And it's a death to a life of running from God. And then the person's raised out, and it's supposed to represent this new life. And it's a life with God. It's a life of knowing and loving and being in relationship with God. Maybe some of you need to do that. Maybe some of you are at a place where you're like, man, I've been running for a long, long time, and I don't want to run anymore. I've got this God who loves me, and I have turned my back and fled, and I want to be brought back to God. And I'm thankful for what Jesus did for me, and I want to embrace that by falling back into his arms in baptism. And if you might say, man, I did not come plan to do that, and I did not come planning, you know, if I went out there, I'd be cold and I'd get wet, and who cares? Because there are some things that are more important. Having a relationship with God is more important. You know, finding the meaning of your existence is more important. So if you'd like to do that today, you can see me after the service and say, I didn't come ready to do this, but I want to do this. And if not, I hope that you get there someday soon. So what we're going to do is we're going to give you a few minutes just to think about what you experienced today and how it applies to your life. And I would encourage you to talk to God about it. Some of you may be at a place where you're like, I'm not sure I believe in God yet. I certainly don't pray. Okay, maybe just think, or maybe try it out. And just maybe think about things like, or ask God things like, God, could you help me to see me the way you see me? Because for so long I viewed myself as some kind of monster. I want to see me the way you see me. Maybe you could ask God to help you to understand his plans for your life and make a commitment to him. I want to follow your ways because I've been living my life and it's not what it needs to be. Maybe you could tell him that you're ready to stop running and to start a relationship with him. So we're going to give you a couple minutes to do that. While we do that, band's going to come up. They're going to play a song, and we're going to also make communion available. Communion is on the tables with the candlelight on each side of the room. It's a piece of bread and a cup of juice that represent the body and blood of Christ. And that verse said that Christ died on the cross once for all, the righteous for the unrighteous, to bring you to God. And in communion, we have a piece of bread and a cup of juice that represent the body and blood of Christ. And it's a way Jesus gave us to remember what he did and to each week thank him and recommit ourselves to this life that he gave up for us and that we want to live for him. And so if you'd like to take communion, if you're not ready for that, man, no pressure at all. But if you'd like to take communion, you can get up grab it and bring it back to your seat. And after you've prayed, when you're ready, you can eat and drink. So let me pray, and we'll give you a couple minutes to do that. God, thank you so much that we exist because you wanted us to exist. You know, there are probably lots of us in this room. I'm going to guess that all of us in this room have some things that we look at ourselves and we just kind of feel monstrous. You know, we look at the way we look, or we look at our lack of, success, education, social skills or abilities, family, friends, and we just feel like there's got to be something wrong with me. And what a great thing it is to know that you love us and you made us the way we are, and that in your eyes we are perfect and exactly what we're supposed to be, that you made us because you want to know us and love us, and you invite us to know you and love you, that you forced us into existence and you have a plan for our life. God, my prayer is that every one of us would come to know you, love you, and to start living in that plan. God, maybe some of us need to stop running today. Maybe some of us need to not walk out into our car, but walk out back and get baptized. God, maybe some of us need to remember that we did give our life to you once, and we need to start really living that life of following you and living out your plans for us, because they're so much better than what we're living. God, thank you that we are not monsters, but we are loved by our Creator, and help us to connect with you. Thanks for communion as a tangible way for us to do that. We pray all these things in Jesus' name. Amen.